Time to catch up with Astro Dave. DaveAredeki.com, that's the website. Have a look at it when you get a chance, but talking to the man himself is always better. David, hello, welcome.
Good to be with you again, Bill. Good to be with you. Beautiful weather we're having, by the way.
We're both in lockdown, but you know what? We can still talk via the phone. Thank you so much.
Skies are sparkling out there at the moment. You've got Venus in one part of the sky and Jupiter and Saturn in the other. Great time to get a telescope out.
Yes, and of course, if you want to know about telescopes, head to your website because you've got all the information on them. You're just the perfect person to speak to about it. Let's talk about something Russia's doing. They were docking a module and then somehow, the space station started spinning. Was there a bit of an accident here or something?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, mate. I bumped your car. Yeah. This could have been a pretty heavy diplomatic sort of an incident. Here's what happened. Look, last week, the Russian cargo vehicle stopped at the space station, which they normally do. Nothing unusual about that. Russia is still a partner with the space station, so here comes the cargo ship. It locked on okay, and they unloaded, but a few hours later, the thing turned itself on. It fired its thrusters. Now, we don't know how or why, but the Russians have come up with an excuse for it. You blame your software. That's the best way to go. It wasn't. It was the computer. But it moved the space station. It moved it out of orbit a little bit. Yeah, not enough to be of any danger to anybody, Bilko, but it did make it move a little. They can move the space station normally, but this was one of those surprise things, and everyone went into a panic, of course, and found out what it wasn't shut the thruster down. And the Russian Ministry of Space out there, Vladimir Solyov, flight director for that mission, said, quote-unquote, short-term software failure.
I would say operator error.
I don't know. Someone left the key in the ignition, I think.
Check more of that story out. It's one of those stories that'll go around. It's like a fishing story. It'll be one of those situations. They go, do you remember the day when the space station kept spinning? And that's that space station's about to be decommissioned anyway, isn't it? It's been that long.
Yeah, it's a dinosaur now. It's over 20 years old, and its time will be up very soon. I don't know what they're going to do with it. The feeling is that NASA are going to drop it into the ocean. It's going to burn up. I think that's probably the best way out of that.
Yeah.
You can't leave them in orbit up there. They can deteriorate, and we saw what happened with other things that left there. We don't need any more space junk.
But no, we don't.
It's still. I don't know. I mean, you could leave that there if you wanted to in a safe place, and it could be a very, very interesting tourist attraction in the future when space tourism does get up and running. But I think what we'll find between now and the end of the decade, it will end up its journey in the ocean. Yeah,
you'll need to maintain it. I mean, its thrusters will have to able to be fired to keep it in orbit. Anyway, we'll see how that plays out in years to come. Now, Dave, you've got you've got some competition. An 8-year-old astronomer already in her young life has discovered 7 asteroids. What's the story here?
Oh, watch out for this kid. This kid's going to go place, I'll tell you what. Look, her name is Nicolina Oliveira, and she comes from Brazil. When she was 2 years old, she said to her mother, "I want a star." Well, her mother sort of thought, okay, well, we're going to buy you one. She said, no, I want a real one. She looked at the stars and was fascinated by the sky. And this is where it starts, I think. It did with me. But at 2 years of age, her mother realized she wanted a real star. Now, let's go to age 7. Here's Nicole, has joined a program called Asteroid Hunting as part of the Citizen Science Program, where you get software downloaded on your computer and it sifts through the data and looks for asteroids that we don't know about. Well, she's found 7. She picked up 7 there and notified them about it, and they were just completely over the moon about that.
Is this achievable through the telescope, or did she get some help?
No, you get the data sent to you. These are images sent to your computer by telescopes that photograph the sky.
Okay.
And you're looking through, a whole heap of data. See, astronomers have got too much to do with their time rather than look for asteroids. Asteroid hunting is not a popular pastime. It's a very unrewarding pastime. It's hit and miss. So they pass it over to the private community, and it's been very successful. So she joined the Council of Adult Education in Latin America. Even at that age, she passed their classes and took their exams. And they couldn't believe this young member of this organization was the top of a tree. This is a child prodigy we're talking about.
That's what I thought.
So the idea came to her, she should start a YouTube channel, and she did, called Observations of Nicolina. And the online club Nicolina's got kids involved with it. After 2 months, 45 kids are following what she's doing. And she's got an Instagram account. Get this. You thought you were popular.
Yeah.
6,000 followers and 1,000 subscribers. I mean, I had trouble getting that after 5 years with my website.
Yeah, it takes a long time, mate. It takes a long time to get that level.
So she said to her mother, I want to be an aerospace engineer when I grow up, and I want to build rockets to carry astronauts on important space missions. All I've got to say is, watch this, kid. Watch this space. She's going to be somebody one day.
Nicolina. What's her surname again?
Nicolina Oliveira.
Wow.
From Brasilia.
Check out davarenicki.com. There's more detailed stuff on her, and she's one to watch. I'm loving this. Now, we've talked about this before. Telescopes need to be strategically placed to get the best observation of the stars, and they're saying now it's time for NASA to build something on the moon.
This is going to happen. I knew this would be a possibility a long time ago. We've done this on planet Earth many years ago in a place called Arecibo in Puerto Rico. They put, they strung a radio telescope, a big network of cables, and formed a dish with it across a canyon. That's since become unusable now. It's deteriorated. But on the moon, the idea is to do the same sort of thing. Now, on the moon, you've got a lot of advantages. You don't have any radio interference from ground-based networks, radio television stations, shortwave, you name it. On the moon, you've got 27 days of quiet there. It takes the moon 27 days to orbit the Earth. You're in darkness there for half the months, and you can observe a whole lot longer. Mm. The idea is to put a range of telescopes very quickly. One's called the Lunar Crater Radio Telescope, the one I like. A whole bunch of thin wire mesh stretched across a moon crater. Now, that could be 10, 5, maybe 2, even 1 kilometre across. That's a pretty big ear. And we've also got the next one called an Ultimately Large Telescope. It's going to look for the biggest and first stars in the universe, population 3 stars, the first time the universe lit up. The other one's called a Far View Telescope, the most sensitive astronomical observatory in history, and a network of hundreds of kilometres of radio antennas strung together. The last one I like is Gravitational Wave Lunar Observatory. This is going to unlock the brand new physics we're talking about. Gravitational wave astronomy is the next thing we're going to be doing in science, and it's going to show us things, allow us to do things. We're talking about disturbances in the curvature of space and time.
And that's the thing, David. Moving gravity is what we need to master if we want to, bend time and space in our journeys around the universe. Yeah.
Yeah. All these things are going to be practical. They're going to be realities for people who haven't even been born yet to work on observatories or in observatories on the moon from the year 2050 onwards. It's going to be interesting when we do, because now we're in the golden age of astronomy at the moment, but this is going to be super big. You know, we're going to unlock things and see things in the next 50 years that we never even thought possible.
Oh, incredible.
And contact with ET out there is quite more than a certainty with some of these radio telescopes.
It's not an if, David, it's a when.
I think so, yeah.
It's a when. Anyway, we'll catch up next week, mate. I know you've got to run, but thank you so much for your time. And more at davarenicki.com if you want to explore more of what we've talked about.
Thanks, Bill. Okay, talk to you then.